Get ready to jump off sides. We're going to get you with the hard count.
My boy's a wicked smart.
Here's your host.
Get the gum out of your ears and listen up.
Andrew Garda.
I am friggin' velvety smooth.
Here we go.
Writing the news right now. But enough of Chicken Little. Let's move on.
Move on or move out.
Move away. And head on to the next topic.
Which is this certain team in the AFC West. Was it last week or 2 weeks ago when we looked at the AFC West? I think it was last week. And we addressed the possible fortunes of one team in Denver there. The Denver Broncos.
Oh, I thought we were talking Rockies.
No. And Mr. Garda here, if you remember, dear listeners, was of the opinion that they had a chance to do some real damage this year, to win, and I quote, at least 8 games.
What's that, 8-8?
Now, I found this notion utterly absurd. I think they're in line to win between 4 and 6 games. Mr. Garda is ready to throw down with something akin to a gentleman's bet, perhaps a bit more, perhaps some monetary value will be plonked down at some point, a gauntlet thrown, if you will, and I'm ready for that. I'm ready to accept that challenge. And the bet will be, if the Broncos win 8 or more games, Mr. Garda wins. If the Broncos win between 4 and 6 games, I win. If they lose... If they don't win more than 3 games, like if they go like
everybody
three
loses.
And three, like I don't even care. Like I just feel sorry for him, and I feel sorry for Andrew for losing so badly that I won't hold him to it.
You didn't mention 7. What happens if they win 7?
I don't know. Nothing. That's okay. Right. The 7 doesn't. 7. All bets are off.
No. 7 or below.
No. I'm saying between 4 and 6.
All right. Well,
I don't think they win 7.
Again, I go back to my contention that. Maybe Kyle Orton doesn't lose you a lot of games, but he's not going to win you very many. Whereas Tim Tebow, even though he is a limited quarterback.
Are you about to pull the Tim Tebow will put his team on his back argument? Is that what this is going to be?
I was going to say he's going to drag him from the depths of hell. But he is a guy who can win. Now, so I think that may be good for at least one win in there. There were some very close games that the Broncos lost last year that if they'd had a quarterback who could, I don't know, rally a team to do anything but fall on the ground... Might have won. But let's get down to brass tacks. Because
right.
For all they...
Because right now you're throwing intangibles at me. Intangibles don't win football games. That's right. You don't look at me like that. You heard me. Intangibles do not win football games. They may increase morale. They may improve attitude. They may even affect people on the field. Fine. Your magical powers. There ain't no mystical energy field controls my destiny. I'm just saying, intangibles do not win football games. Football players making football plays win football games. And Tim Tebow has to make a whole lot more football plays to win a whole lot more football games.
If intangibles don't win football games, then explain your cheese head you were wearing when I saw you lighting candles at St. Patrick's Cathedral before the game.
Just lie, because you say that, and people will really think that's true. That's just not right, man. Okay, let's be clear. That is not that he just made that up.
He goes to synagogues. He doesn't go to St. Pat's.
I don't wear a cheese head, but I was lighting candles.
No, I wasn't.
I'm kidding. He's kidding.
He was praying.
Don't disseminate lies.
Okay. Well, let's look at the schedule. All right.
Play by all means.
By all means. All right. Very easily.
I could play that entire episode pretty much. I could just do an episode of clips of me talking about Denver and Aaron Nagler being wrong for the entirety of the show. I just feel that. That's awesomeness. That's what that is. You know what this is? This is the Hard Count. I'm Andrew Garda. And welcome to another edition of me talking NFL football here on CheeseheadTV.com. Of course... You know me from such great websites as CheeseheadTV.com, which is where this podcast is hosted and where I drop a view from the press box at irregular times throughout the week. Of course, FootballGuys.com for all of your fantasy football needs. And Bleacher Report for a smattering of other things that I do, including just yesterday. And now I can't find which clip. Oh, there we are. My value up, value down article, go to Bleacher Report, look up Andrew Garda. And for some reason, my phone's ringing. But hey, we're nothing if not professional on this show. But look up Andrew Garda and you can check that out. My 15 players, teams, coaches who are either value up or value down. So check that out. And of course, the beginning of this show was clips from the early portions of the Hard Count, which was when Aaron and I did this show together. And, you know, all kidding aside, I actually do miss talking to Aaron. I feel like that was a lot of fun. This is a lot of fun, but Nagler is always good to talk football with. And we came to a difference of opinion about the Denver Broncos and their possibilities for winning any games at all. And things looked grim. We had a little bet, 8-8. He said anywhere from 4-6. I said 8-8. Could be more. And I we had a little bet, and that bet ended up being for dinner. And that bet ended up being won by me this weekend. Now, here's the funny thing about this, and we'll talk a little bit more about Timmy football later on. But, you know, things look grim because freaking Kyle Orton was still quarterback. And that was not in the plan. That was not supposed to happen. So that almost cost me dinner. But eventually everybody realized, well, Kyle Orton's not going to get this job done and throw Timmy football in there. And it really was a sink or swim sort of thing. And I touched on this actually in that value article, which is why I brought it up. You can check it out again over at BleacherReport.com. But John Fox is a brave man and bucked convention by saying, you know, rather than try and force this quarterback into the offense I want, or I think, or, you know, the offense that everybody runs, I'm going to take the offense and form it around my quarterback. And again, I said this in the article I wrote, but he did the same thing with Von Miller. He did the exact same thing on the defensive side. When Von Miller was drafted, I remember I'm at the draft, and I look over at Cecil Lammy, 102.3 radio host and NFL insider over there, and I'm like, okay, I mean, Von Miller's a fantastic, he's a beast, but he doesn't fit this defense. They don't need him. They're not going to be able to use him, right? John Fox also formed a little bit of that defense around Von Miller. They're getting him to do what he does best, not trying to make him something he isn't. And I think that, more than anything else, has been the success of the Broncos. Tim Tebow has helped. Again, we'll touch on him in a little bit. But this has been, I think, a lot about John Fox. And Nagler kind of mocked me in episode 5 of the Hard Count because I did say, you know, Fox comes in and wins games and he really hadn't taken over teams before. But my point really was is that he is a pretty sharp mind, and I think he's proving it right now. We'll see how long it lasts. New England Patriots this weekend visiting Denver. I'll talk a little bit about that game as well later when I do my NFL picks. But for now, just know that I've won the bet. The Broncos are, at minimum, they'll be able to go 8-8, and that's unlikely it's going to be even worse. They've got themselves in a position to win their division and maybe be a very dangerous team in the playoffs. I mean, if you look at the rest of that division, Chargers are not catching up. Chiefs, come on. Todd Haley just got fired. Hobo Couture will not save your job, Hobo Man. And Todd Haley, by the way, there's another example of how the Bill Belichick tree has some issues. Bill Belichick gets away with what he does because he's Bill freaking Belichick. He's the hoodie. He's won stuff. And the first couple times he tried the hard-nosed thing, didn't go over all that well. But Josh McDaniels, Todd Haley, Romeo Crennel, Eric Mangini, these guys have not succeeded as head coaches. And it's because they come in, throw their weight around, in Mangini's case, considerable, and try and just force things to happen. like, you know, Haley did not get along with a lot of the players. You notice, of the two coaches fired Monday, Sperano and Haley, two players came out to talk about Haley. The entire team of the Dolphins came out to back Sperano. I don't think Sperano was in any great shakes, but there's a huge difference there. He was getting that team to play, and we'll talk about Miami in just a few minutes and my issues with Miami. But Haley was not a guy. And here's what's funny. Everybody keeps saying Josh McDaniels is going to be in Kansas City. Josh McDaniels isn't going to Kansas City. They just got rid of Josh McDaniels. His name was Todd Haley. I mean, they're two different guys, but a couple things here. First of all, McDaniels, not a player guy. I'm pretty sure that the Chiefs staff does not want to repeat the sort of put-offishness of Hobo Part 2, Todd Haley. Second of all, Josh McDaniels has destroyed Sam Bradford. I mean, it is tragic what is going on with Sam Bradford. I think that is more about Josh McDaniels' offense than it is about Sam Bradford, although he has been playing hurt. Now, some of it definitely comes down on Bradford. For the love of all that is holy, you can't look at what Josh McDaniels has done in St. Louis and say, yeah, that dude deserves another head coaching job right now. Uh-uh. No. But anyway, back to the division. Kansas City imploded. They're done. Which leaves Oakland. Oakland, Darren McFadden is not coming back before the playoffs. It's a Lisfranc fracture. Maybe they'll force him to come out next week, but I don't think that's going to work. They're tired. Carson Palmer is reverting to Incemptosaurus. He's just throwing picks left and right. He's got bad Sanchez disease. Denver is going to make the playoffs, kids. They're going to win that division. And then we all know it's just a new season. And you can win a Super Bowl with outstanding defense and a good run game. And if nothing else, Denver has that. But really, all it comes down to is this.
Coming after you, Nagler.
Yeah, so enough of that. This is not going to be the I'm Taunting Aaron Nagler show. It could be, but it's not going to be. So officially welcome to the Week 15 edition of The Hard Count. I'm Andrew Garda. My phone will not ring again. Of course, you're listening to this via the fine folks at CheeseheadTV.com. I am the lone voice of sanity in a Packer-filled wilderness, a missionary, as it were, trying to bring the light of the rest of the NFL to cheeseheads everywhere, failing miserably, because nothing kills a missionary's work than when the pagan gods are rewarding the damn savages with a stunning, undefeated season. The Packers, I kid Packer fans because I love Packer fans. I especially love the fans on this site. Water off a duck's back right now for them, because I could say whatever I want, and that doesn't matter, because they just point to the scoreboard. Really, you know, we could talk about Denver, the Jets, we could talk about Houston, and we'll talk about all of them, but I'll tell you what, it really, really feels like we're just picking whoever's going to get meat grindered up in the Super Bowl by the Packers. I have a hard time seeing anybody beat the Packers in the NFC right now, and I have a really hard time seeing any of the AFC teams take them down also. But the one thing the AFC teams have is a good defense, and that can make a big difference. But so I, of course, staff writer here at CheeseheadTV.com. I do From the Press Box sometimes sporadically through the week. You can also catch my fantasy football stuff over at footballguys.com, where I do the fantasy triage and the Thursday Night Lights article. And you can always catch a little bit of both at bleacherreport.com, including my article on value up, value down. Go search Andrew Garda on bleacherreport.com, and it is one of my latest articles. And it's 15 players, coaches, and staff in general, teams, whose value is either up or down. And of course, I mentioned the Broncos. John Fox, big reason for why that is. Definitely stock up. But beyond that, we're going to be heading over, as I said, to Miami to talk a little bit about some of the disaster that is impending there, in my opinion, and why that is the case. We're also going to talk about the Philadelphia Eagles and how one columnist is telling the Eagle fans to boo their team. Something does not compute there. We will also talk a little bit about the concussion problem in the NFL and how not only are they having to fight teams, they're having to fight players. Of course, we will continue to celebrate my victory over Aaron. Talk a little Tebow, talk a little Denver, talk a little playoff football, and then my picks for the week coming into a critical week 15. Again, this is The Hard Count. I'm Andrew Garda. Let's move along, shall we, folks? If you watched last Thursday night's Steelers-Browns game, you took a moment to probably say a prayer for Colt McCoy when James Harrison laid him out. James Harrison, of course, now suspended for a game due to that hit. I'm not going to retread the same argument and the same discussion that we have over and over and over and over and over again about what is and what isn't a good hit and the lack of definition. Colt McCoy was out of the pocket. He was running. He changed his mind to throw. Could Harrison have moved, changed his course? We're not going to talk about that. What we will talk about is that McCoy leaves, is out for a set of plays. Seneca Wallace gets the Browns into the red zone, and then all of a sudden Colt McCoy is on the field. Colt McCoy does not look like he knows he's on the field, but he's on the field. He throws an interception, and everybody's like, oh, Colt McCoy sucks. He's terrible. Oh, he can't do anything. Colt McCoy has his issues, but in that particular case, something was wrong. I don't know how in the name of Tebow he was able to pass a baseline concussion test on the sideline. And this is a consistent problem. It's a problem that the NFL has to figure a way to grapple with. They have to make something change. Browns linebacker Scott Fujita had come out. He's also a member of the NFLPA Executive Committee. And he's asking the union to push for the presence of an independent neurologist on the sidelines. And other people on his team agree. Left tackle Joe Thomas. Tight end Evan Moore. Listen, I've already talked about, I think I talked about this last week. I'm pretty sure Nagler and I talked about this as far back as the summer. You have to have independent neurologists. You have to have independent doctors. You can't trust the teams to not pressure the doctors into doing what they shouldn't do. You can't trust the players to know their own health. We'll touch on that in a minute. And you can't ask the referees to look for signs of concussion. A, these are guys who miss simple holding calls. B, they miss those holding calls because they already have too much to do. There has to be some independent analysis of these players. Now, you know, the Browns are like, Colt was fine. He was fine. We didn't know we had a concussion until the next day. Oops. I call shenanigans on that. I'd call it something else, but I'm trying to keep it family friendly. It's crap. And I think the fact that Fujita is out there calling shenanigans as well means he knows it's crap, and it was crap. But you know what? Teams want to win. They're going to do everything they can to get the guys out there. So fine, all right? Get an independent guy. Get a person whose job does not depend on the teams, does not depend on the players, to take a hard look at these guys and say yay or nay. It's that simple. Now, you know, I said I don't trust the teams, and I don't. And I don't care what team it is. I like to think that teams have the best interests of their players in mind, but we all know that's not the case. Listen, they're human. They want to win. There's a lot of pressure to win. This is a league where the only real way to keep your job is if you keep winning. So there's pressure. They're human. It's going to happen. People are going to push a little bit harder to get a guy in. It happens at every level of football. Hell, it happens at every level of sport. It makes no difference, actually, if we're talking about sports or business or anything else. You play hurt. Hell, I've had jobs where the expectation was, I don't care if you're sick, you're coming in. I don't care if you give the plague to the entire rest of the staff. Nobody takes off. I have jobs where people don't take lunch. Work 11, 12-hour days. Welcome to America, where if you don't drop dead in the middle of work, you didn't live life to the fullest. So no offense to the teams, but I don't trust them. Turns out, though, I can't trust the players either. Now, I've been an athlete, not at a high level like this, but I've been an athlete. My son, my older son, both of my sons are athletes, but my older son has played tackle football this year. You've heard me refer to it on the show before. I have experienced that self-imposed pressure where, like, I need to be in there. I need to win this game. And I've seen my son do it. I'm not saying my son had a concussion or was really badly hurt, but I've seen him play through pain. At one point, he had someone land on his arm, and his arm really hurt. He came off the field. This was practice, and he was crying, and I was like, all right, let's take a break. And he's like, I'm going to be all right. I'm like, no, look, seriously, let's take a break. Let's put a little ice or something on it. He's like, no, I want to go back in. I'm fine. Players want to play. There's nothing worse than standing on the sideline hurt when you think you could be out there making a difference and watching your team lose. Again, I can point to my kid again. You know, played off and on the first half of the championship game that he was in, and then wasn't playing the rest of the game, wasn't hurt, didn't make a mistake, but wasn't on the field. And that was incredibly frustrating for him, not because he, you know, just wasn't on the field, but because his team was losing. And he was trying to figure out, like, how do I help from the sidelines? You can't. And you can't if you're hurt. Athletes want to play. They want to be on the field to play. They want to compete. They want to make a difference. Great article by Mike Freeman of CBSSportsLine.com talking about how there are players who try to circumvent NFL efforts on concussions. I'm going to just read the first beginning of this, and I urge you to go check out Freeman's work because it's always good. This is outstanding. I mean, this is a huge article, so I can't even begin to read it. So the hit came fast and hard to the head of one of the AFC's best wide receivers. He stayed on the ground a moment and got up slowly. One step, two. On the third, he stumbled, obviously wobbly from the hit. He regained his balance, made his way to the sideline, and was standing next to one of his offensive coaches, waiting to go back into the game, when the team's trainer approached. The player raised his hand in a stopping motion, and the trainer stayed away. In a different game, a different Sunday, another top AFC wide receiver on another team took a hard hit to the head. Again, clearly stumbled and wobbled. Once more, a team physician approached, but the player made a similar stop gesture, and the medical staff backed away. That was something Freeman witnessed firsthand. He didn't name the players, didn't name the teams, and there could, because he allows for the fact there could be a lot of reasons why they didn't follow through all the way. The fact of the matter is, and this is what the article is about, players want to play, and they will find ways to manipulate the system. Independent neurologists should, if empowered properly and paid well, and have secured jobs that they know they're not going to lose because they make a call a team doesn't like or a player doesn't like. It won't solve it completely, but it'll make a difference. Maybe you'll see a few less people pull a Colt McCoy and end up back in the game. For what it's worth, McCoy still hearing bells, I think. So you can cap on McCoy for that pick. It was a bad ball. But maybe if he could have seen straight. Maybe if there had been an independent neurologist on the sideline to stop him from going back in, it would have made a difference. Moving on to another group of people trying to make a difference, Philadelphia Daily News columnist John Smallwood wrote a column on Tuesday that pretty much told Eagles fans that if they want to change, if they want change in Philly, if they want the team to do things differently, They have to root for the Eagles to lose down the stretch. Okay, I know for a fact that right now the Packer fans listening to this can't comprehend that. I'm reasonably sure that most of the rest of you don't get it either. Listen, I'm a recovering Jet fan. I'm a fan of the NFL, and since I cover the NFL, I don't really have a team, but sometimes I put on my Jet hat and I have a team. Excuse me. I will never not cheer for that team. When I'm being a fan, when I allow myself that, I would never root against my team. This is the same nonsense that went on with the Suck for Luck thing, which DraftKings started making a joke about because Luck and Suck rhymed. That was the only reason that came about. Nobody really ever thought Suck for Luck was something that was real. The Colts are not throwing games. Cheering against Andy Reid and the Eagles is stupid. I'm sorry, Eagles fans, if you are going to the game, cheer for your team. Like, the fact that... I can't believe that I'm saying this. And I can't imagine that real Eagles fans are actually listening to this. Like, there's almost no way for the Eagles to make the playoffs. Fine. If you're going to root against your team, don't go. Seriously, if you're not going to support your team, don't go. I didn't like it when the fans at MetLife Stadium booed Sanchez before the Jet game a couple weeks ago. They're your team. You're there to cheer your team. Don't cheer against them. Show your frustration. Be ticked off. A bad play can get booed, but don't cheer against your team. That's insane. What's wrong with that? I mean, what's wrong with Smallwood? How can you write that column? Yes, I understand. Everybody thinks Andy Reid's going to not get fired again, and it disturbs people. In this particular case, I really don't think that you booing is going to make a difference. It's not going to get Reid fired. Either he's fired or he's not. I want to say it was Bill Parcells, but I can't remember who it was. I think it was Parcells. So I'm going to say it's Parcells. Said that if you spend too much time listening to the fans, eventually you'll be sitting with them. Eagles fans, please, if you are out there listening to this, cheer your team on. I understand this has got to be a god-awful season. As a recovering Jets fan, I've had them. The Packer fans who listen to this podcast, they've had them. Virtually every team has had craptacular seasons. You are not alone. Do not be that guy. Do not be that guy who pays his money to go see his team and booze them. Don't be that guy, that gal, that kid. Ignore this request for you to boo your team. Cheer for your team. Support your team. A real fan supports his or her team through thick and thin. That's the reality. Anything else is just a joke, and you're just a bandwagoner. Eagles fans get a crappy rap that they mostly don't deserve any more than anyone else. And I'm looking at you, Oakland and San Francisco and Los Angeles, who keep killing their own fans. Eagles, if you boo your team, you deserve everything that comes your way. I know you're better than that. Cheer your team. Ignore this Nimrod. Speaking of Nimrods that people should ignore, how's that for a segue? This is me applauding Mike Florio at Pro Football Talk. Hey, I got through half a podcast without mentioning Florio. For his article talking about Stephen Ross, the owner for the Miami Dolphins, Ross should consider stepping away from the stage. Hell to the yes. This I know Nagler and I had almost a weekly segment on during the lockout. Stephen Ross has never seen a situation where he couldn't open his mouth and sound stupid. So, of course, the Dolphins fire their current coach, you know, their lame duck coach, Tony Sperano. And I say lame duck coach because last year, while Sperano was still employed, the team went after Jim Harbaugh. Good job, guys. This is the same team that was flirting with Orton and then said, oh, Chad Henne, you're still our quarterback. We were just playing. I'm sorry, she was laying there naked and I fell on top of her and accidentally had sex with her. Neither of those excuses work, by the way. I don't have any first-hand knowledge of that, but I'm assuming they sound about as stupid. Oh, we just had to talk to Jim Harbaugh about stuff. We just happen to be in the Bay Area. Sorry, Sperano. Tony Sperano is a sacrificial lamb, by the way. Tony Sperano was fired because the entire organization is incompetent. Listen, Sperano is no great shakes. He's not a fantastic coach. I've had issues with all sorts of calls he's made this year and last year. But that organization, and I'm sorry, Finns fans, and call me a Jet Homer, but I actually love when the Dolphins are good. It makes the AFC East more interesting. The Bills and the Dolphins, Pats and Jets should be good at all the time because it makes it more interesting. It's more fun. But your organization has done some dumb-ass things in the last year. You know what? Starts right at the top. Whether Stephen Ross is complaining about how much players make versus how much the organizations actually make, to the Jim Harbaugh thing, and now, after you get rid of Tony Sperano, you got a fresh start ahead of you. Ross is like, I'm looking for a young Don Shula. I don't really know what that means. The kind of coach you're looking for, a young Don Shula. Are you looking for a fellow who is locked into the 1970s and is going to run an offense that is archaic? Are you looking for a clone? Or did you happen to read a history on the Dolphins and said, oh, Don Shula's name is in here a lot. People seem to like him. We're looking for a Don Shula. Our quarterback, we're looking for some sort of Dan Marino type. We're also looking for a Jason Taylor type. Oh, he's still on the team? Oh, how did I know? Sure, it's a offhand remark. But this team needs direction. This team needs some sort of direction and a legitimate plan. I mean, honestly, it doesn't seem like this team has any plan. Some of that is on Ross, and some of that is on general manager Jeff Ireland. But who are you going to get for this Dolphins team right now? With Ross just flapping his gums in idiotic fashion all the time. Bill Cowher's not coming out for the Dolphins. It's not happening. We could shoot that down right away. Bill Cowher is looking for a great opportunity, not an okay, maybe rebuilding opportunity. I also liked how the press conference had Ross and Ireland basically saying, we have our quarterback, but we might not. Again, direction. It's all direction. And you know what? Here's a tip for public speaking. If you're not sure about something and you can't be authoritative and direct, don't say anything. But Andrew, AG, man, they got to ask these questions about what they're looking for. And say, you know what? We just took a step in a new direction. We're in the middle of a season still. We are really looking at all of our options. We're really open to the best possible candidate. We're open to Matt Moore or Chad Henne coming back and playing. We're also open to some free agents. We're going to look at all of our options. Not really that hard. more than anything else, I gotta agree with Florio. I think Ross needs to take a huge step back from the stop from the stoplight. He needs a stoplight from the spotlight. Oh yeah, I forgot about wanting to honor Tim Tebow, the Florida Gator, in the rival Miami Hurricanes stadium. When Tebow was playing the Dolphins. Yeah. Genius! Yeah, the next right step they take. Maybe the first right step they take. I'm going to take a brief break, chug some water, and then I'm going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit of Denver, a little bit of Tebow, a whole lot of playoffs, and a whole lot of Week 15 picks. I'm Andrew Garda. You're listening to The Hard Count here on CheeseheadTV.com. I'll be right back.
Whoa.
Not at San Diego, in Denver.
No, in Denver. I don't care where it is. I don't care if it's on the moon. Denver is not beating San Diego this year. Mark it zero, dude.
Mark it zero? I'm not marking it zero.
Mark it zero.
Because until that offensive line actually steps up and
you're out of your element, Donnie.
Until their defensive middle does something worth showing,
all right.
That's a winnable game.
Next.
San Diego
so
can win.
Here. Next.
All right. But that was one of the original three, so I'm not adding. So we're still at five. Chad Henne, Miami, next. That'll be six.
Wait a second. Wait, you're chalking that up as a win.
I think that's going to be
Denver at Miami.
Denver at Miami, I think, is a win. Because
so you've got John Fox installing a new offense and a new defense with no offseason, going into Miami, into, yes, Chad Henneville, but...
Chad Henneville,
who
beat
the world champion Green Bay Packers in Lambeau last year. With a Sperano coach team that's been together for 3 years, 4 years. How long has Sperano been down there? I don't know what you see in this Denver team that's making you think that this is going to go into Miami and win that game.
What's amazing Garda. To me is this is almost as if you think I'm saying they're going undefeated at this point.
Well, it sounds like that's what you're saying.
Hell no.
The one thing you've said is they're going to lose at Green Bay. That's the smartest thing you've said all night. Other than that, it's like you're drinking heavily. I don't know what's going on.
Welcome back from the break.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
It's The Hard Count coming at you.
This kid is a gamer. He's a follower. He's a playmaker. And a shot caller.
In case you didn't know,
I got Tebowed. He shattered the mold. And all he does is win. All he does is win games.
Listen.
I got Tebowed. He shattered the mold. And all he does is win. All he does is unleash.
Tell Tebow,
let him go.
It's time.
Turn him loose.
Let him play. Let him play.
Okay, on Sunday.
Unleash.
Tell Tebow,
let him go.
It's time.
Turn him loose.
Let him play.
I'm going to church Sunday.
Run, pass, option. I think that's my game.
I guarantee you that.
I'm no John Elway.
He's rewriting the book.
Week in and week out.
He's a unique
football player.
That's what Tim Tebow's all about.
He's a gamer. He's a baller. Playmaker. Shot caller. He's a gamer. He's a baller. Playmaker. Shot caller. Unleash.
Tim Tebow.
Let him go.
It's time.
Turn him loose.
Let him play. Let him play.
Okay, on Sunday.
And all he does is win. All he does is win.
One more day. One more win.
All he does is win game.
We are back. This is The Hard Count. And that was a little bit of genius that I found on the interwebs this week. It is a compilation of Skip Bayless quotes, mostly. A little Hulk Hogan, a little John Elway, a little John Fox, a little Tim Tebow. From, I think it was 1st and 10. I'm not a Skip Bayless fan. And the fact that he loves Tebow the way he does actually is almost reason to not like Tim Tebow, except for Tim Tebow so damn likable. But, you know, Tim Tebow, if I ever meet him, I think I need to buy him a beer or dinner or something, because the whole reason at this point, he just walks on the field and grass grows and he heals people and it's a miracle. Listen, the Denver Broncos season at this point is a lot about Tebow and a lot about other people. I can't put too fine a point on it. the reason that Tebow is able to bring these teams back is there are multiple reasons for it. First of all, an outstanding defense. But see, all of these reasons are attached to each other. So they'll all lead to each other. So just bear with me for a minute. A fantastic defense. A Super Bowl winning defense? Probably not. A very solid defense. A defense that has played very well over the last 5 or 6 games. Against some offenses that are not all that great. Again, New England, big test of this weekend. We'll get to that. Solid defensive effort. Defense has played better because they're actually not on the field as much. They're not on the field as much because Tim Tebow runs the clock out and actually makes first downs, unlike Kyle Orton, who is three and out, king of the three and out. Tebow is effective in part because of that defense, because the defense is putting the Broncos in a position where they can actually drive down the field. They're in good field position. He's also, both of these facets of the team are successful because this is a run-first offense. Aforementioned friend of the show, Cecil Lammy of 102.3 of The Ticket in Denver, calls this offense John Fox's wet dream. John Fox, who we watched in Carolina, is a run-first, run-second, run-always type of guy. As I think I mentioned on the last show, he's like the anti-Andy Reid, the anti-Mike McCarthy. If he never had to throw a pass, he might never. But this grinds the clock out. It grinds the clock out. It softens up the defense. And by the way, this run-first, run-frequently offense, this power-run game that they have going, it's not a power-run game. But the constant running, it wears defenses down. You want to know why Tebow and the Broncos are able to come back against a lot of these teams in the fourth quarter? It's because they are gassed. Note that a lot of these wins are home. It is not easy to play in the Mile High State. It's not hard to play at normal sea level. I mean, it's hard to play. But it is not hard in the way that it is in Denver, in the Mile High City, in Colorado, in the thin air. People get gassed. Hell, I think in the Jets game, I want to say Santonio Holmes was taking oxygen in the first half. And these are conditioned athletes. It's just a different air. So that, on top of this constant running at the defense, is going to gas the defense. It helps allow him to run a 95-yard offense in under 2 minutes without going vertical the way that an Aaron Rodgers, the way that a Tom Brady, hell, the way that almost any other quarterback would go. So it's like a Mobius strip of logic here, because you've got, on the one hand, a guy who is, listen, Tebow is not, he's just not a great quarterback. He's not at this point. Let me qualify that. He is not a great, our perception, NFL quarterback. He's not Aaron Rodgers. He, by his own admission, is not John Elway. He has improved as a passer over the last few weeks. He has made some good downfield throws. Hey, Demaryius Thomas holds on to a ball last week against Chicago, and that's a much different game. But he's still, you know, Tebow needs to learn to read defenses better. He needs to get pre-snap reads down. Needs to make better adjustments. And he needs to work on his accuracy downfield. He needs to work on his overall accuracy. He takes good care of the ball. He is a giant Mack truck load to bring down when running. And overall, a decent starter at this point. I don't know that he'll ever be a great NFL starter, but he's decent now. He plays pretty well right now. So consider this. Tebow is able to do a lot of what he does because the defense is good. The defense is able to do a lot of what it does because the offense is playing well. You know, in one of my articles, in the article, the Value Up, Value It Down article, I talk about the Eagles. They're a group of individuals who happen to be on a team. If you look at Denver, Denver is a team with individuals on it. They are a one purpose. They believe in one thing. And you know what? The defense believes in Tim Tebow. You know, Aaron gave me crap for talking about the intangibles, but the fact of the matter is they made a difference. Champ Bailey was out saying, I think it was after the Chicago win, might have been the win before. Hey, you know what? We were down, but we believed in Tim. We knew that if we kept doing our job, he would do his job. Never in the history of mankind has Kyle Orton heard those words said about him. No offense to Kyle Orton. But that's something Tebow brings that nobody else did. It's something that he could bring. Listen, I don't know if this is going to keep working. I don't know if they're going to go one and out in the playoffs. Hell, they could get destroyed against New England. It wouldn't shock me. Tom Brady throws 3 touchdowns. Is Tebow going to be able to come back from that? I almost want them down 3 touchdowns so I can see if they'll come back from that. But honestly, I don't doubt this team. I don't buy Tebow as a pure NFL quarterback. I need to see some of the stuff I talked about, the better pre-snap reads, better reading of defenses, stuff like that. I think he's earned a shot next year. I can't figure out his game. I can't figure out why nobody can stop this for 4 quarters. Except for the everybody's exhausted by the end of that 4th quarter. You know, again, much like seeing New England, I'd like to see this team do what they're doing on the road a few more times. Against some high-powered offenses, against some better teams. I'm not going to take away wins from Denver, and I'm not going to take Tim Tebow's wins. You play who's in front of you. You win those games or you don't. Trust me, as a Jet fan, I get that. But I'm curious to see how far this team can go. Who makes adjustments? Can they make the playoffs? And in the playoffs, is this the type of team that may be built to make a run? I'm intrigued. More than anything else, I'm intrigued. I want to try and figure out how he's doing what he's doing, how John Fox is doing what he's doing. I liken to this, and I'm talking a lot about my kids today, but my older son wants to learn chess. And talking to him about it, because I've never played a lot of chess, one of the reasons he wants to learn it isn't just because the competition and the fun and the strategy of it on his end, although those are things that are important to him. He likes trying to figure out what you're doing and why you're doing it. That's what I want to do. I want to figure out what Tebow and Fox are doing, and I want to know why. This offense does not compute. It does not compute to me. I cannot wrap my head around it. I will not dismiss it, though, and I want to know how it works. I want to take it apart, and I want to figure it out. Interestingly, so do all the defensive coordinators in the league. So if Tebow is your quarterback next year, it is going to be a very interesting 2012. So enough about Tebow. We've mentioned the playoffs. We're going to run over tonight. Sorry, kids. Hey, you're not the one up till 12:30 doing this, so. But let's talk playoffs here. Let's start with the NFC. Green Bay locked up. Their division locked up, first round bye. At this point, they've got the tiebreaker over New Orleans. Actually, I think they get first. I think they get home field advantage if they win one more game. Cheeseheads, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think they've got that locked up yet, but almost. Of course, the quest for undefeated. But I'll tell you what, they'll take a Super Bowl ring over an undefeated record. That's for damn sure. San Francisco, a little bit of a stumble this past week, but they're not losing the NFC West. They're the championship. Right now they're ahead of New Orleans. They got to keep winning to stay ahead of New Orleans. They've got the win percentage in conference games. That's how they're ahead of New Orleans. But that could easily change. New Orleans 10-3 as well. They have locked down the NFC South. NFC East. Giants currently in charge. Just beat Dallas. Big win. Big win on the road. A couple of people told me, though, they got to beat Dallas again. But you know what? Beating Dallas in Dallas is huge. I think the Giants can win that game at home. They've got a couple of tough games, including the Jets. Technically, they have the Jets at home, but it's almost a neutral site game, except for there will be more Giant fans, but there will probably be a fair amount of Jet fans there, too. Giants are not, by any stretch of the imagination, locked in. Because if they drop out, they could drop out of the playoffs. Atlanta in the 5 spot. They have a tiebreak over Detroit on head-to-head win percentage. And Detroit in the 6th spot. Chicago, I got to tell you, I think at this point, that's the NFC. The only difference that we'll see at the end of the season is probably, you know, going to be in the Giants-Dallas battle. If there's a change, it'll be there. But I think Atlanta and Detroit are pretty locked in. Chicago's a big mess. Losing Forte. Excuse me. Marion Barber's a disaster. I just don't foresee Chicago pulling it out at this point. Sorry, Chicago fans. The Cowboys right behind them. The only way the Cowboys are getting in is if they win the division. They can. They and the Giants both have about the same schedule. This will probably come down to that last game. If the Giants beat Dallas at home, they're in. I'm just going to call it now. That last game is going to be super critical. I think the Jets-Giants game could go either way. But you know what? I think that could be the only one that they lose. If the Giants just drop that one, Dallas wins. Dallas is 8-6. The Giants is 7-6, or, you know, whatever. Dallas is one game up. If the Giants win, they'll have the tiebreaker. They'll be tied. Giants will be in. So Dallas is in a tough position. And that last game is going to be super meaningful. Seattle's not going anywhere. Arizona is not going anywhere. Philadelphia is a complete joke. Carolina, Ron Rivera is all pissed off because they're not finishing games. Figure that out in the offseason. And Washington round out the people with quote-unquote shots, but they don't really have shots. Then you have Tampa Bay, Minnesota, and St. Louis. Spagnuolo, one of your potential next head coaches to get fired, by the way. So the only real, question mark, aside from order behind Green Bay, is whether the Giants can hold off Dallas. In the AFC, you've got Houston in the top spot. That ain't going to last, kids. Let's just start there. Houston, Baltimore, New England, 1-2-3, all 10-3. Baltimore has the tiebreak over Pittsburgh, tiebreak over New England based on strength of victory. Houston has tiebreak over New England and Baltimore based on best win percentage in conference games. Houston has lost Andre Johnson probably for this week. TJ Yates is great, but I don't think he's going to be able to carry them very far. They'll get in the playoffs. I'm not sure they're going to have that first round bye or home field advantage. Andre Johnson may play just because they need the home field advantage. Baltimore 10-3. It's possible Pittsburgh leapfrogs them. So that's up for grabs. AFC is much more interesting in terms of the overall order of everything. New England 10-3. They're not going to lose the AFC East. So they can move up in the pecking order in the conference rank if Houston and Baltimore fall apart. So they might move. Denver's pretty much locked into that number 4 spot at 8-5. They could go on a huge losing skid. It's possible. I don't think they will. I think they're going to end up winning the division. In the 5th spot, Pittsburgh at 10-3. They're not going to go any lower. They're pretty much in the playoffs. they too could have an epic collapse and drop out. It's possible. I don't think it's going to happen. The New York Jets suddenly cruising at 8-5, playing very good football. Have the Eagles this week. That's a big game. Then the Giants the week after. That's a big game. And then Miami. Miami's a big mystery for me right now. How will they react to losing Sperano? They're always dangerous. If it comes down to that last game, as a Jets fan, you should be a little worried. I think they could take the Eagles. Giants is a coin flip. It may come down to that Miami game. Tennessee at 7-6. I don't think Tennessee makes it in. They're talking about maybe having Jake Locker in there. If they do that, no offense, Jake Locker fans, but I wouldn't do that this close to the playoffs. Chris Johnson's kind of playing well. So they could still make a run. I don't know that they do. Cincinnati falling apart here. Have some tiebreakers over Oakland. At 7-6, Dalton, A.J. Green. Got a long way to fight before they're really back in it. And you have Oakland at 7-6. Carson Palmer's not playing well. Darren McFadden's gone for a while. I don't think they're coming back. San Diego, technically not mathematically eliminated, but they're eliminated. Same thing with Buffalo, Kansas City, Miami at 4-9. Going to play a spoiler. Cleveland at 4-9. Jacksonville 4-9. Indianapolis with the fantastic 0-13. Will they win a game? Not this week, Chippy. So basically what we're looking at here, in my opinion, in both divisions, okay? The Giants and Dallas. That's going to come down to that last game between the two. That's my opinion on that. Atlanta will probably be okay at 8-5. Detroit will probably slip in there. Detroit and Chicago could flip. I just think Chicago has too many injuries. It's possible Dallas could jump over Detroit. This is actually, looking at the NFC a second time, it's actually a little closer than I expected it to be, upon first glance. So this could go a couple different ways. But I do think only one team comes out of the NFC East. And I do think that Atlanta and Detroit are your best bets to slip into the last two wild card spots. I just think Chicago's too beat up to really leapfrog anyone. Dallas might. Seattle, outside chance, but they got to win out. And everybody else has to lose, basically. Over in the AFC, really, really interesting race. Houston has to fend off Baltimore, New England. I think Houston is not going to have a shot at the AFC Championship or the Super Bowl if they can't get home field, as beat up as that team is right now. Baltimore, exceptionally tough. I don't think they lose to Pittsburgh. I think they stay in the division. I think it's going to be awfully hard to leapfrog when you lost twice to that team. New England could get in front of Baltimore. I could definitely see that happening. Denver's going to win the AFC West. Maybe I'll make Aaron take me out. No, that won't work. I'm going to be away during wild card weekend. It's going to make him take me out to eat for that game, but that won't happen. Anyway, sorry, plotting. Denver will probably drop a game to New England. We'll talk about that in just a second. But I think overall they're going to stave off Oakland, who I think just has too many injuries to overcome. Pittsburgh, they're in. I don't see them dropping out. The Jets, that last spot. Jets, Tennessee, Cincy are really the guys fighting for it. Oakland could sneak in. Jets need to win, I think, two of their next three. They got to take at least two of their next three to get in. Tennessee might come down to whether they put Hassel back in, but that team is shaky to me. Cincinnati, I think, is the real big threat to the Jets' position. So that's that with that. Let's take a look very quickly at this week's slate of games. Thursday, Jacksonville and Atlanta. How in the hell did Jacksonville get so many primetime games? Excuse me. Atlanta really needs to win this one. It's at home. Jacksonville is still a little bit thrown over the place. Blaine Gabbert. I mean, it comes down to Blaine Gabbert, who looks scared in the pocket. Looks totally uncomfortable, and I think, honestly, Atlanta's just going to run him up. I think Michael Turner gets back on track with this. I take Atlanta. Dallas at Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is going to play this one tough. They're also banged up. They're going to want to play spoiler for Dallas, but I don't think they're going to be able to pull it off. Dallas is going to be pissed that they lost at home to the Giants. I'm taking Dallas Saturday, December 17th. Sunday games, Carolina at Houston. Carolina is always a tough out. Houston at home, they need this game. They've still got Arian Foster. Andre Johnson may or may not play. If Andre Johnson plays, I think that they definitely win. But I think based on Arian Foster and Ben Tate's ability, I think they're going to hand off the ball a lot. T.J. Yates seems to be able to get just enough done, so I'm taking Houston at this one. Washington, the Giants, again, another team that's going to want to be a spoiler, not going to be able to pull it off. Washington is just in disarray. They're a mess. This defense is going to hammer at Rex Grossman. Eli Manning having a tremendous season. I am taking the Giants at home over Washington. Buffalo and Miami, the game that has almost no impact on anything anywhere. I'm going to go with Buffalo. I think Sperano getting fired is going to throw this team off for at least a week. I think this is a week that Buffalo gets right and plays well. Seattle at Chicago. This is my upset special for this week. Without Forte, with Haney under center, with Barber playing, it's going to come down to defenses. And Seattle's defense is just good enough to stop Chicago's offense. And I think Marshawn Lynch will be able to run on Chicago's defense. So I'm taking Seattle. Upset. Upset, especially at Soldier Field. Moving on, New Orleans at Minnesota. I can't take the Vikings in good conscience, no matter where they're playing. So Saints, for sure, over Minnesota. Cincy at St. Louis. St. Louis is just not looking very good right now. Bengals get a win, stay in the playoff hunt. Tennessee at Indy. Tennessee is going to win that one as well. Indianapolis will not get their first win against the Titans. Green Bay at Kansas City. Do we actually need to talk about this? I guess so. Aaron Rodgers. James Starks may be back. He may not be. Greg Jennings. Now, your one question may be, hey, Greg Jennings is hurt. Is that going to hurt this team? No. Jordy Nelson will step up. He's going to get more of the coverage rolled his way. So James Jones and rookie Randall Cobb, some of the watch very closely. Your fantasy football tip for today. James Starks may or may not play. Brandon Sane may or may not play. Ryan Grant did pretty well last week. So he's your big guy right there. Green Bay over Kansas City. Detroit at Oakland. Ooh, this is a big one. But I think this is ultimately the game that takes Oakland out of the playoff race. Detroit really needs to win this one. Stafford and Calvin Johnson need to get right. Defense needs to get fired up. I think they're going to be out to prove something. It's going to be the Nasty Bowl. The old Raiders versus the new Raiders. I'm going to take the new Raiders, Detroit Lions, over Oakland, even in the black hole. New England at Denver. I should almost recuse myself for this one. I really want Denver to win, but I really don't see it happening. You know what? I'm on board with Denver as a team. I love what they're doing. I love what Tebow's doing. I think New England runs out early, overwhelms this defense. I think it then sort of gets into a pitched back-and-forth battle. But New England's going to be up by a couple of scores, by a couple of touchdowns probably, by the end of the first half. And I just don't think Denver's going to be able to come back. I think Chicago had the way to beat Denver. New England can be thrown on. I just don't know that Tebow has the ability to do it yet. Prove me wrong. It's entirely possible I'll be proven wrong. I have no problem with that. But I'm taking New England, even at Denver. It's a tough one, though. That's a coin flip. And I'm not sure if it's a coin flip because I like the Jets or if it's a coin flip because I really have bought that much into the whole Denver Broncos thing, although I'm pretty damn close. Jets at Philadelphia. I also think this will be an upset. I think the Jets are going to be able to beat Philadelphia out. I think they have a lot to prove. I think that the secondary of the Jets specifically, even with Brian Leonard being hurt, really wants to prove to the Eagles that, you know what, we didn't need your Nnamdi Asamoah. And I think the dink and dunk defense of the Jets, I think the way the Eagles run their defense, the dink and dunk offense of the Jets plays well into that. So I think the Jets will be able to come away with a victory here. Cleveland at Arizona, who really cares? But I'm going to say Arizona, especially if John Skelton is starting. I think that he'll be able to find Larry Fitzgerald better than Cobb has. And I think Chris Wells is actually going to have a pretty good game against Cleveland. So I see that happening. Baltimore will beat San Diego at San Diego, thereby pulling a bullet into the chances that San Diego might actually make the playoffs. By the way, still think it's incredibly lame that CBS was allowed to protect not just the Eagles-Jets game, but also the New England-Denver game. That should be a primetime game. Tell me you don't want to see Tebow Brady. Packer fans, you don't want to see Tebow Brady, but everyone else wants to see Tebow Brady. That Green Bay, Kansas City will be over. What else are you going to do with yourself? Baltimore-San Diego is not going to be a pretty game. I'm not going to have to watch that game. It's not going to be good. Pittsburgh at San Francisco. This is a very interesting matchup. Two very tough defenses. Two pretty good offenses. I am going to upset the Pittsburgh Steelers and call the San Francisco 49ers on this. I know. I'm crazy. San Francisco coming off a loss that should not have happened. I think they're really going to put in extra effort to beat the Steelers. It is at home. If this was in Heinz Field, I don't think that they are able to win. But San Francisco at home, I think they're going to be able to get up in Roethlisberger's face. He's going to be playing through a high ankle sprain, a low-grade one, but still, it's going to make a difference. He's not going to be as mobile as he normally is. I think that the Steelers will not beat the San Francisco 49ers. I think it's going to be a very interesting game, though, and that's going to be a game that I definitely tune into. So there you have it, folks. That's going to do it for this edition of The Hard Count. Hey, what do you know? I made it in just over an hour. I'm pretty impressed with myself. I am awesome. Anyway, this is Andrew Garda. Thanks for sticking with me. Hope you've enjoyed the podcast. And as I always say, thank you very much for tuning in each and every week. It's a lot of fun to do. I love talking to you guys. I love the Cheesehead TV crowd. And of course, like everybody who comes here just to listen to the show as well, I appreciate you guys. I wouldn't be able to do what I do the way I do it if it wasn't for you. If you need to get a hold of me, have lineup questions, or just want to shut your mouth, a couple of ways to get a hold of me, thunderingblurb@gmail.com. Follow me at Twitter, Andrew_GARDA. Or you can always comment in one of the many places that I reside in. You could also email me, garda@footballguys.com as well. So, thank you very much. Thanks, as always, to the Cheesehead TV folks for keeping me here and allowing me to have a place to put my podcast. And, I'm gonna go start looking at restaurants and have some suggestions. I'll take suggestions, by the way, if you have suggestions for restaurants in New York City. Don't have to be too pricey. I don't want to be a douchebag about this. I actually have a couple ideas of some decent restaurants that I think Aaron would like, because as long as he's buying me dinner, he might as well enjoy the food as well. Anyway, that's going to do it for tonight. Thank you so much for coming by. I'm Andrew Garda. This has been The Hard Count. Take it easy, enjoy the games, and good luck with your matchups, except for Eagles fans. You know what? I actually changed my mind. You know how I told you guys not to boo your team? Boo your team this week. This week only. But then go back to cheering them next week. Take it easy, guys.
You've been listening to The Hard Count.
Let's go again!
With your host, Andrew Garda.
And you will know my name is the law when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
Word!
It's like you're drinking heavily.